little bit out of order today. Senator Posansky has to leave a little bit early. I want to make sure that the bills that are going to work session today, we can actually get out of the committee without losing the quorum. Are the folks that wanted to testify on Joint Memorial 1 here? Do I see any hands?
Are these ones that
actually,
we want to get out?
Yeah, actually, maybe we'll just move them anyway. I just wanted to accommodate if anybody wants you, but that's probably all right. After that, we'll move to Senate Bill 237, then 149, and then 236. And just by way of announcement, too, the governor yesterday had unrolled the renewable portfolio and the renewable energy issues. And those are all issues that will be coming to this committee, in particular what is being called for now the renewable portfolio standards, which are the goals that that the state will implement in order to achieve renewable energy standards by 2025. It is going to be a huge, complicated bill that I think we will be quite successful with, but it's going to take great effort on the committee's part and on all of the stakeholders' part. We will start hearings on that the second week of February, and we have set aside 2 weeks' worth of hearings. I mention it today just because if folks are watching or listening or folks that are sitting out there, I just wanted you to know the timeline by which we're going to get to that issue, since it's a big issue. All right, I will open a work session on Senate Joint Memorial 1. Well, then we are now out of a work session, and I will open up a public hearing on Senate Joint Memorial 1. Somebody just came in, I understand, and wants to testify on that. Is that correct? All right. Go ahead, Sue.
Senate Joint Memorial 1 urges Congress to fund cleanup efforts at Hanford Nuclear Reservation and to expedite cleanup actions in order to safeguard public health and welfare and protect the Columbia River.
That's it. Mr. Gray, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Newton.
Go ahead as soon as you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Mike Graney, Director of the Oregon Department of Energy. And I have a handout that gives background on the Hanford site that's a Federal Department of Energy site in the state of Washington. Resolution was requested by our Hanford Cleanup Board. That's a citizen panel, members appointed by the governor to oversee the state's efforts to assure that Hanford is cleaned up and does not present risks to the state of Oregon and to our people and to our various economic and agricultural and recreational and fishery interests. The memorial is one that is similar to ones that this legislature has adopted in the past. It urges continued support by Congress for funding to clean up Hanford, to provide the funding necessary. It urges the Federal Department of Energy to move forward on cleanup as a top priority, and also requests that Congress provide the state of Oregon with a decision-making role at Hanford. There's an agreement called the Tri-Party Agreement that guides the Hanford cleanup. It's an agreement pursuant to the Superfund law, and the three parties are the state of Washington and two federal agencies, the Department of Energy and U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. And while we spend a substantial amount of time and effort reviewing technical issues and providing input, we have no decision-making role and no role in the where the actual decisions that determine the pace of cleanup are made. So that is the reason for our request on the tri-party agreement. I'd be happy to answer any questions or provide additional information, Mr. Chairman.
Committee? Nothing? Okay, thank you, Mr. Graney.
Thank you.
I don't see Doug Riggs or Matt Wingard in the room. So if they're – oh, there's Matt. Just walked in. Matt, why don't you come on out? If Doug is close by and you want to grab him, go ahead.
In a meeting. I don't think you thought you'd take this up first.
Yeah, we're moving pretty quick.
I'm glad you're here. Go
brevity
ahead.
May be good because I think we've got a committee ready to act.
Members of the committee, my name is Matt Wingard. I am the president of the Hanford Information Network that Doug is also, he was actually the founder of HIN. We are a coalition of folks. Mostly we're people who at one time or another have lived in Central Washington or have some connection to Central Washington. That's usually what binds us. So we've lived in and around the area of Hanford, and we're now located in Oregon and the Vancouver area. And so we have an interest in this subject, and we follow a lot of what goes on with the Department of Energy and the cleanup effort. I'll make my comments very, very brief. We're very supportive of the cleanup at Hanford. One of the things that the Hanford Information Network does is to try to educate folks about just the history of Hanford. We do a lot of presentations, especially in high schools in the Portland metropolitan area and in the Vancouver area, in which we try to basically just describe the history of the Hanford area and its role in the Cold War and in nuclear energy and give it an sometimes it's very difficult for instance high school kids to fully understand the span of the Hanford reservation and all of the competing interests that were at work there, and then the level of environmental cleanup that is required now in the wake of many of the activities that occurred there. So we have some displays. Doug was instrumental in creating a Lego display, actually, that describes how the how large the tanks are and how the waste is leaked out underneath them. And many of the students that that part of the presentation come away feeling like they understand and had no idea, frankly, all of the things that were going on and have gone on in the last 50 years up at Hanford. So this is a subject that is kind of off the radar screen for a lot of folks who live in the Portland metropolitan area, even though it's a significant issue and it's very close. I think you probably wouldn't be surprised, but most people would be surprised at how little understanding a lot of folks in the Portland metropolitan area have about the history of Hanford. And we our group supports the cleanup efforts, and we urge you to support this joint resolution today.
Good. Thank you very much. I would just note for the record, too, Doug Riggs has signed up to testify. He's indicated that he's got some written testimony that is being submitted, and also that he is in favor of passage of the bill. With that, I will close the public hearing on SJM1, and I will open up a work session on SJM1. Could I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Joint Memorial to the floor with a due adopt recommendation.
Senator Atkinson moves SJM1 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Carrier, please.
I could do it.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson. We'll carry the bill. And we will... We had a Senate Joint Memorial 2 on the agenda today, too. We're not going to hear that one today. The committee has found a significant typographical error, so we'll be sending that in for a correction, and we'll get to it shortly. So with that, I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 237.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 237 increases maximum permissible fee paid by pesticide manufacturer or a distributor for annual registration of each pesticide formula or formulation. The bill allows Oregon Department of Agriculture to use up to $40 of each fee to implement the pesticide use reporting system between January 1, 2008 and December 31, 2009.
And Lisa Hansen and Terry Witt, why don't you both come on up? Ms. Hansen, why don't we start with you and then Mr. That's fine. That's okay. Ms. Hansen, why don't you go ahead?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lisa Hansen, the Deputy Director with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. The bill you have before you, Senate Bill 237, simply increases the pesticide registration fees in the pesticide program at ODA. These fees go to support the base pesticide program, which consists of three basic components. The pesticide product registration, pesticide user licensing, and compliance. The pesticide program within ODA is funded mainly through other funds, those being pesticide registrations and pesticide user licenses. In addition, there are some federal funds and a little bit of general fund that was provided to us last session to do education and outreach to urban users. This bill is supported in the governor's budget and would assure that the program can continue fully funded at its current service level. This proposal does not increase any additional funding to the pesticide use reporting system. And with that, I would entertain any questions you might have.
Mr. Witt, why don't you go ahead, and then we'll ask questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Terry Witt. I'm Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter, here representing that organization and also Crop Life America, which is an organization of registrants in the United States representing about 90% of the pesticide products sold in the U.S. We're here in support of the increased cap on pesticide registration fees from $160 to $250. We think that based upon the projected budgets that we've seen over the course of the next several biennia, that this will provide the needed funds to support the base program through approximately the year 2013. And we think that that's a reasonable use of revenue. It's interesting that as Deputy Director just spoke to, the product registration fees do provide a significant portion of the base pesticide program, currently at about $1.2 million, which is about three times the next two largest categories, which are license fees at about $430,000 and grants, which are unfortunately dwindling from US EPA, that are about $450,000. So it is a very significant part of the base pesticide program. And once these fees are fully realized to their maximum, the additional $90 per product should provide somewhere in the neighborhood of about an additional $950,000 to the department for their base pesticide program. We fully support the work that the department has done from compliance to registration and training and certification. We would hope that over the course of the next several biennia that perhaps the legislature would see fit to provide more general fund for the department, since this is a program of general welfare for all the citizens of the state. But we and Crop Life America do support the bill that is before you.
Thank you, Mr. Witt. Committee, any questions for Mr. Witt or Ms. Hansen? None, then I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 237, and I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 237. Could I have a motion?
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
If you're asking for a motion, I move Senate Bill 237 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator. Any discussion?
Just a quick comment, if I could, Mr. Chair. First, I appreciate the support brought forward by Oregonians for Food and Shelter. This has been a highly charged issue over the last 10 years and continues to be so. The most important part of this is the work done by the Department of Agriculture in how pesticides are applied and how they're licensed and taken care of, and that's something that quite often gets lost in this whole debate. But more importantly, this issue, as well as mixing zones, has been one that I feel has been kind of missing the mark here, and we've had a discussion about this, and we'll have another one in this committee later on. That is that instead of going after pesticide use reporting, instead of going after mixing zones, we should be talking about putting together, as DEQ and for support from business groups like AOI, have talked about systemic, long-term water quality, air quality monitoring system in the state. That is something that's within our grasp, would give us much more information, be much more appropriate, and wouldn't just be targeting individual groups for problems. We really don't know what the effect of pollution is in our environment and where that's coming from. We think most of it may be coming from municipal sources, from non-point sources. We're not answering that question. So I'm going to obviously vote for this. But at the same time, every time I see this come up, I'll be making comments that we're not really approaching this in the way we should. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you, Senator. Anything further?
Mr. Chair, I find it highly unusual that after all we've been through over 8 years of this, that there's not one testifant here from the environmental community. I find that to be pretty shocking, actually.
Does that concern you?
No, I just think it's perhaps some of the misinformation about the PERS system over the last several years hasn't been all that important, that they wouldn't come here and testify for it.
Well, in whatever respect, I'm glad that we've got the increase done and are able to be moving on with it. So thank you both for your testimony, and thank you, committee. Senator Przanski has a motion for a do-pass recommendation to the floor on Senate Bill 237. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 237.
Carrier.
Oh, thank you. Carrier. Senator Przanski. And we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 149. Ms. Marshall, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 149 modifies statutes related to mine reclamation, revises definitions, and establishes when State Department of Geology and Mining Industry may revoke, terminate, or refuse to renew a permit. It specifies when department may modify an operating permit or reclamation plan, creates crime of knowingly or recklessly causing substantial harm to human health or the environment. It sets a punishment of maximum of 1 year's imprisonment, $6,250 fine, or both.
Thank you, Mr. Chapin. Go ahead and...
Chair Ivakian and members of the committee, I'm not Bruce Chapin.
I'm sorry, you moved up so quickly, and that was the only one on my list. I'm sorry. Who are you?
It is my error. I forgot to sign in, and I've done this long enough that I should have been able to remember.
All right, I'm not going to make you get up and go back. Just state your name and launch right in.
Right. My name is Gary Lynch. I'm the Assistant Director of the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, at least temporarily.
Certainly.
I know a lot of people be sitting behind me, but the one I probably should introduce, particularly for my job security now, is the State Geologist Dr. Vicki McConnell, who is also our director. With that, we are bringing before you today a very good bill. Unfortunately, it's not perfect. That bill will yield very valuable enforcement tools that are needed. However, it is imperfect, and those imperfections need to be changed. And so I'm coming here today. I got to admit, I wish I had been, this was perfect, because it sounds like we could have got it moved today. But that's not the case. It's not perfect. We have agreement amongst all, most if not all, stakeholders. We would like an opportunity to go back, work with those stakeholders, work out the final details. We do have the agreement in principle, but the legal details are important. And there's some construction and language that need to be changed to make the bill work. So with that, and I know you're busy, I would be happy to answer questions and get into the detail of the bill, but it does need some work.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Przanski.
I'm wondering it sounds to me that Mr. Lynch is thinking that maybe he'd like to come back after they make whatever changes, and because it sounds like it may have some changes that's going to, if we get testimony now, may not be applicable at the time the new bill, or as I say, the revisions come forward.
Chair Ivakian, Senator Przanski, that's exactly right. Whatever I say today will be changed and should be.
And if you're willing to stop talking and go back and sit down, I think the committee would be just fine with that, unless there are any other questions.
Well,
Senator Beyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess... I just want to be able to see the changes and have a extensive hearing on them, and then maybe, draft more changes if need be, because I would say this bill has significant problems by my perspective.
No, it's my intent. There's two other folks that have signed up to testify today, and we're going to take their testimony today. But certainly we'll have ample time to see what changes there are, and if folks have reservations, we'll do a whole other public hearing and sort it out then, certainly. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your time.
And now is Bruce Chapin from the Farm Bureau. There you are at the back of the room.
Much better looking.
I'll bet Mr. Chapin has more to say, though.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bruce Chapin. Serve as the chairman of the Oregon Farm Bureau Agriculture Committee, also serve in the Oregon Farm Bureau State Board as a director. And I reside at 9965 Wheatland Road North, Salem, Oregon. As has been said, there are some issues in here that we need to address. We have four amendments that we are suggesting you take a look at. Not knowing for sure what they're planning on changing, this may or may not be relevant. but the first comes in Section 2. What Section 2 does is establish an extremely limited set of conditions where the department can revoke, terminate, or refuse to renew an operating permit. One issue is very important to agriculture, and that is maintaining our water supplies. And the water issue is not even mentioned in this draft. We should suggest that dropping the water table 2 feet be added as a condition that allows the department the authority to take corrective action. And see the proposed amendment on the attached sheet there. Now, keep in mind, the way this is written, this doesn't direct them to take changes or make changes. All it would do is give them the authority to look at it. Second one, Section 4, once again, this establishes the conditions where the department can modify an operating permit or reclamation plan. And again, these conditions are very limited and make no mention of the water issue. Substantial harm to off-site property needs to be defined to include but not be limited to the reduction in the water level of irrigation or domestic wells in the area, once again, by 2 feet. And the third one, you find in Section 5, Number 15, addresses the definition of surface mining. The old definition excludes excavation or grading operations conducted in the process of farming. I have concerns about this exclusion being lost. The author of the new wording appears to feel the definition of surface mining is unclear without clarifying that the definition does not include the excavation or grading operations conducted in the process of on-site construction, but failed to clarify whether or not surface mining includes or excludes similar activities done by a farmer. So I'd like to have that corrected. Understand that surface mining, all you have to move is 5,000 cubic yards in a year to be regulated by surface mining. In agriculture, we move a lot of soil. You take a tractor going at 5 miles an hour, pulling 6/18s, plowing, and it'll move 5,000 cubic yards in 34 minutes. Didn't move it far, but we did move it 18 inches. The fourth one, issue that's a concern to me, is many locations throughout the bill, the word shall has been replaced with the word may. And it's my understanding that the word shall is a directive for action, while the word may allows the option of acting or not acting. And likewise, the phrase may not also allows for the option of acting or not acting. Changing shall to may provides DGAMI with much fewer restrictions on their authority. And this has the potential to create a major change in division of roles and duties between local governments and DGAMI. In Section 8, Number 3, in the last sentence, the word shall is replaced with the word may. And this change appears to allow DGAMI the option of approving or not approving an operating permit and reclamation plan, even if the local land use application has been denied. Allowing DGAMI to overrule local government in the permitting process is not in the best interest of the state. This issue can be cleared up by simply restating the word shall. Just retain the original wording, or the wording that's currently in the law. If it isn't broke, don't fix it. With that, I conclude, and any questions?
Committee? Anything? All right. Thank you, Mr. Chapin. Liz Frankel?
I'm Liz Frankel from the League of Women Voters of Oregon. I am their Natural Resources Action Coordinator. I'm reading this having understood that there will be future hearings. The League of Women Voters of Oregon is a statewide, grassroots, nonpartisan political organization that encourages the informed and active participation of citizens in government. We have followed aggregate issues through a number of legislative sessions and have also been a participant in the Aggregate Farmland Consensus Group that was formed in 2004 and recently terminated. The League of Women Voters believes in the management of land as a finite resource, preservation of the physical, chemical, and biological integrity of ecosystems, and the protection of public health. In keeping with this position, we also support the reclamation of land damaged by service mining. When Senate Bill 149 was introduced, we contacted the Mineral Land Regulation and Reclamation Program of DGAMI to learn more about the bill. We were told that they would have some critical amendments. Because these amendments have not been available, our comments at this time will be fairly general. However, we request the opportunity at a later date to address Senate Bill 149 in more detail. In general, we find that several sections of the bill add clarity and specificity to existing statute. However, we do have concerns with the new policy statement in Section 2 and Section 11 regarding marketable mineral reserves. In Section 2, the new language limits the ability of the agency to revoke, terminate, or refuse to renew an operating permit. Section 11 allows the agency to delay reclamation activities if marketable mineral reserves exist. We are also concerned about the new definitions in Section 13, sub 6, of substantial harm to human health or the environment. We note that in Section 14, sub 8, regarding civil penalties, the deleted language reads, no immediate threat to human health, safety, or the environment. It is puzzling that the word safety was not retained. And we appreciate the opportunity to explain our concerns in detail after reviewing the amendments. That's close to a punt, but not quite.
Yes. Pretty darn good punt. Anybody?
No, thank you, Ms. Frankel. Mr. Lynch, I know you'll be back again when the bill is cleaned up a little bit, but if you want to just, 2 minutes tops to respond to anything that you heard today, that would be fine.
Mr. Chair, as he's coming up, I think one of the things I would suggest is that the department work with the Farm Bureau in making whatever changes, see if we can't get that compromise or say all those concerns are addressed before we put everyone back through the process.
Chair Vakian and members of the committee, Gary Lynch again with Doug Gaming. The concerns mentioned are valid. The answer I have for them is what we have are major architectural changes to this bill that when looked at can be confusing, and it's best summed up by looking at an example in Section 6. The old number 4 on line 18 is prepared to be deleted. There it says a city or county may determine and collect fees for any function performed pursuant to subsection 2 of this section. However, no such fee shall exceed the amounts in our fees. The reason that's being deleted, and local governments were very concerned when they saw that. I'm not a lawyer, so the AG's office was the one that really wrote this for us. And what we have here is a legal construction that they believe needs to be taken out of our law because we have no authority to do this type of thing. So the argument is then you just remove it, because to say that we don't have the authority to collect fee or to prevent a county from collecting fees is exactly the truth. So it doesn't need to be stated in our statute because we don't have that authority to begin with. So we see these kind of architectural changes that need to be made. And again, we will be more than happy to work with Mr. Chapin and Liz Frankel on these issues. And some of what they said is that's the answer to some of what they said. And in addition, we need to talk to them with some of the specifics on the, for instance, how do we calculate 2 feet and how does water resources do it and is there a better way or this way?
Senator Bates.
And Mr. Chair, thank you. First, what Senator Brzozowski suggested, I would heartily support, and of course, get the League of Women Voters involved too. I'm trying to see what's behind all this, and my memory is reaching back to last session when we had some issues, it seemed to me, concerning moving aggregate and moving materials in and around stream beds. And I'm not sure if this is what this is being part of what this is talking about or not, but if it is, then we need the legislation. There were some issues that came up, one in our part of the state, one in some other parts of the state, that were really pretty serious, and there was no authority to really deal with it. And then there was questions when you get to court, who has what jurisdiction, and it was just got to be a sort of a land war in Asia. They often say, you don't know where you're going, what's happening, where you're coming out the other end. So if this is trying to clear that mess up, then I'm very supportive of this, but we need to have it sat down, work it through, and bring it back to us. And I'm assuming that's kind of the background of this thing.
Chair Ivaki and Senator Bates, there's been a number since then, too, where it's clear our best enforcement tool is when we go out, meet with the aggregate operator, and let him know what our expectations are, understanding their needs, and come up with a solution. And that works most of the time. But frankly, if an operator wants to thumb their nose at us, they can continue to operate with a number of violations because our enforcement tools are so slow to get to be able to fix them.
Right.
That a number of operators came to us and were very upset with the way we were treating other operators who were competing with them, who are not following the rules, while the other folks, whether they agree with the rules or not, are following them. So we are trying to be fair to the field here, and so that's exactly what we're trying
okay.
to do.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Lynch. The timeline on bringing this bill before us again may be dependent on drafting in LC's office for sure, but I would much rather address it sooner than later, and so I would encourage you in the next week to get together and do whatever planning and amendments you need to do. And when that's done, check in with our administrator, Ms. Marshall, so we can get this on the calendar as soon as possible, okay?
Chair Vakin, thank you very much.
And that closes the public hearing on Senate Bill 149, and I open the public hearing on Senate Bill 236.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 236 creates a voluntary lifetime brand inspection for Equiday, expands Oregon Department of Agriculture authority to collect brand inspection fees, removes yes. brand inspection certification requirements for livestock other than cattle, replaces fee fund system with fee exemption for certain cattle transport, increases the cap for brand inspection per head and per hide basis. It declares an emergency effective on passage.
And Ms. Hansen, why don't you come up with Roger Huffman?
For the record, I'm Lisa Hansen, Deputy Director with the Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify regarding Senate Bill 236. As was explained to you, this is a bill that will modify our brand inspection program and increase fees to continue to support that program into the future. This bill is supported in the governor's budget. Just to give you just a little brief background about the brand inspection program, and then if it's acceptable, I would let Roger Huffman walk you through some of the specific changes that are in the bill. The brand inspection program is one of the oldest programs within the Department of Agriculture. And it, I think, put simply, helps maintain the identity of ownership of livestock and when livestock are transferred. This program is solely fee-supported, and in the late fall of 2005, it became clear as we were seeing decreasing numbers of inspections and increasing costs that the program was going to have to begin to look at restructuring and potential fee increases. And so the industry brought together a very broad industry advisory group to fully evaluate the program and to look at the fees and determine what would best suit the industry and how it functions today. And so with that, I would ask that Roger Huffman, our program manager, talk you through the specific recommendations and what's in the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Roger Huffman, program manager for brand inspection program with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. I guess it started at the testimony that was provided to you. Again, the summary is at the top under the bill number section, and then we'll go through the higher level stuff, I guess, on the individual changes. And a lot of it is just in the wording, but essentially on the horse inspection program, it's been a mandatory thing for a long, long time since, again, as mentioned, early in the century. So that is something that the mandatory requirements would be suggested go away after long discussions with the industry and the auction markets and those that have been doing it. And that would then be taken down to a voluntary situation. There are advantages for our producers and our people in Oregon to have an inspection or an ownership document when they travel to other places. And so this is kind of a middle ground rather than just say we don't do horses. It removes the mandatory nature of it. Along with that, because identifying the horse inspection costs, the recovery of fees to cover the inspection costs were just not there. So there is a fee increase in this bill for lifetime and annual inspections for horses for those that want to voluntarily get them done. Secondly, the cap on the per head fee for horses has been at 75 cents since the 80s, and it has in the late 80s it moved from 70 cents to 75 cents, and it's been 75 cents ever since then. In 1991, there was a $10 service charge applied, and then there was no per head cost or travel cost increases up until this last year. So we're asking that the cap be raised up to a dollar. What's not mentioned in here, but it's in the languages, is that the language would say a minimum of 85 cents and a maximum of a dollar. So what we're dealing with right now is that a proposed 85 cent is what we would start at if this bill passed in this form. Third recommendation. Well, I guess in the second one, there's also this travel fee that was talking about, this $10.99 since 91. That would be, we're asking that cap, or this legislation as proposed says it would be $10. We're asking that amendment be made, and it was intended that it would say $25. And with some, I think, testimony you'll see today, we've been visiting with industry, and there would be some amendments to change the language from saying it shall be $25 to it may be $25, because if everything changed as proposed, we're not exactly sure where the funding's going to fall, if the horses, how many people are going to voluntarily do it and all that. So it may not need to be $25, I guess, what I'm getting at.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Brzezinski.
So are you saying that would be a cap and it could be less?
Yes.
Okay. You may want to put that in the language in that way so you have that flexibility, but we would know what certainty the maximum that it could be.
Yes. I think that will be proposed.
Ms. Hans, go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the bill that is currently in front of you, the agency would ask to work on several amendments for that bill that did not get included in the draft, and I think those will be supported by ODA, as well as I think there are a couple of small amendments that may come forward with other testimony from the Cattlemen's Association.
Senator Atkinson.
The first paragraph in the testimony, Roger talks about the inspecting program, and then further down we talk about a voluntary inspection program.
Yes.
Somehow now I'm confused. Can you clear this up for me? Is this thing strictly a fee-based program?
Chair Atkinson and Senator Atkinson, yes, it is strictly a fee-based program. It's a fee-for-service program.
So we're not hurting small producers? Are small producers subject to this?
Chair Ravakian, Senator Atkinson, this would apply, the fees would apply if somebody called and said they wanted to go to get an inspection. So it's a voluntary thing. It's not a mandatory. That the mandatory language is being removed.
Senator Bates.
A comment and a question. First of all, I didn't know that horses, mules, and asses were equidae. I'm pronouncing it right, and I instruct my wife the next time she wants to describe me as one of those three, and you can guess which one it is, that she referred to me in public as equidae now, not the other. It's a much nicer word, and most people won't know what she's talking about, but I'll get the message. Which needs to be delivered quite often. The question I have is, does any of this relate to tracing cattle as far as disease is concerned, specifically mad cow diseases? I mean, we're talking about branding of cattle in this also. Is there any relationship to that and the tracing of cattle through herds or transfers that might be important for us?
Chair Vaki and Senator Bates, very clearly it does. It's not spelled out in this particular statute. But clearly, our state veterinarians in the audience, if you need more clarity, but the tracing and movement of animals and ownership changes that this program provides are heavily used in the traceback of disease and the movements, just like the BSE trace from Washington. All of our western states have these programs, and they are very key. And that is why a big portion, I think, that the industry is very supportive and strongly of this program because it does have more than one purpose.
Follow, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, please go ahead.
So I'll make this is something that has real, most of the bill is voluntary, and I own horses, other people own horses. You may want to get your horse branded, may not, and you may be concerned about theft and other things that occur. But to me, what's important here is about this thing about the cattle and the importance of making sure that the public, both domestic and overseas, knows that our cattle are safe. This is a serious issue for cattlemen. So does this relate directly to that?
If I may, Roger, to help you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill continues a mandatory program of livestock identification for cattle, which it ties into and is part of that whole traceback system. It simply makes brand inspection for horses now a voluntary program.
I'm worried about that. Yeah. I want to be certain that we're taking care of the cattlemen as far as protecting this, if I may, that we have enough funds in here to maintain that protection program. We saw this in the Ag Committee last year, and there was concerns about it. So does this maintain enough money in the fund that we are going to continue that program in a robust manner?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, this is one component of the animal health program. There's an additional funding in the Animal Health and ID Division that takes care of the disease trace back. The brand inspection program is the tool that we use to get there, and this funding would allow us to continue a strong mandatory brand inspection program.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you both. And the term equidae, this particular one before us applies mostly to horses and such. I guess Doc Bates included. But and I know that Jim Welsh is back there from the Cattlemen's Association. I'm guessing that he has a beef with the bill or wouldn't be here. So if he'd like to come up now, let's hear from him.
Shields your speech writer?
We're just carrying out I'm doing better.
I hope I'm doing better. Mr. Welsh, go right ahead when you're ready.
Chair Vakian and committee chairman, chair, committee members, excuse me. I am Jim Welsh with the Oregon Cattlemen Association, representing them. And this particular bill we are in support of. I have had a chance just briefly to touch bases with several of you, and I have to apologize, Mr. Chair, to Senator Bates. I didn't make it to his office today. Everyone else has heard a little something, or at least got an idea of what we are proposing here as amendments, and I just want to go over those very quickly. This is certainly a program that is a cattleman's program, and we work very closely, cooperatively with the Oregon Department of Agriculture here. And so we have been in consultation continuously with them on this. And And so we have worked out some things we think will help us. And we have been working continuously on this and through the advisory committee and everything. So there are some things that were unresolved, but, and we're continuing to work on, as I understand. So because the bill is up now, we think what we are proposing here will certainly give us, in the rulemaking process, the ability to fairly address this with all producers. And remember, not all producers in this state, small or large, are members of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. So we want to make sure what we do, the department does, is something that will effectively and equitably take care of the problem here and bring some more money into this fee-based program, okay? Now, let's go to page 2. We'll go under section 2, sub 2 here, is where we're proposing an amendment. Look at line 35 in your bill. And it is talking about the department here. And what we would eliminate is shall and... insert may also assess and collect a service fee of, and of course they propose, the department we support, the deletion of 10 and inserting 25. What we propose is we also would insert on line 35 after of, it would be up to $25. Okay, that in essence provides Mr. Chair, Senator Prozonsky's concern about a cap, that is the cap up to $25. And you see the deleted section, or sentence, I should say, that preceded this sentence here in, on line 35. In the event the requested brand inspection is at a place other than an auction market or registered feedlot, that's pretty big change here, okay? And so we want to make sure that what is allowed in this program in the department in the rulemaking process, that we can adjust these things and fairly regulate this fee where it could end up being for the marketplace, registered feedlot, small producer, large producer, and we think this amendment will do that. And we ask that you if you would, have that amendment printed up for us, and when you're ready to move the bill, or I will just have one of you sign on, and I'll get it printed up. Doesn't matter which, but we have this taken care of, and when we come before you, it'll all be ready.
Mr. Chair. Senator Prozonsky.
Jim, maybe since there's going to be other changes, maybe you all can just work together with the department and just get it all in one.
That's fine with me. That's what you want. That's great. Thank you.
Whichever way you want to do it, that would be fine. I also asked Senator Atkinson to keep in touch with you on any amendments if necessary. But like I said in the previous bill, too, pending anything that is happening in LC that might slow up the amendment process, I certainly would like to get to this sooner rather than later. So in the next week, please get together, work out whatever you can, and if we can get it back before this committee and out quickly, that would be my preference. All right, thank you, Mr. Welsh. And with that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 236. And with that, we are adjourned.
Did you meet up with your cousins?
I didn't. I ran over to the other side of the building, but.